In 2008, voters in California passed Proposition 8, which added this sentence to the state constitution. Only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California. The American Foundation for Equal Rights decided to take Prop 8 to federal court, a move criticized by some advocacy groups, including the ACLU. But the case went forward with a team of advocates that raised many eyebrows. Ted Olson and David Boyce, the lawyers who argued Bush v. Gore before the Supreme Court after the 2000 presidential election, now co-counsels in Perry v. Schwarzenegger. Former Solicitor General Ted Olson joins us in just a moment. If you have a question for him about his case for equal marriage rights, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website, npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Ted Olson, a partner of Gibson Dunn here in Washington, D.C., has been kind enough to join us in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you, Neil.
And a lot of people are going to wonder why you took this case.
Well, there are probably a lot of reasons why I took this case, but it comes down to, I think, that it is time in this nation to end discrimination against individuals on the basis of their sexual orientation. I think we are doing great damage to our fellow citizens, our fellow human beings. I think those of us who are married and can get married don't think sometimes about how much it means to be married or to have the right to be married if you're denied that right. Part of the case that we've been putting on in California demonstrates to the court, and I hope to people who pay attention to the case, how much it means to be married and how much it would mean to be in a relationship where you would like to be married and have your government, the state of California, say in its constitution that your relationship cannot be recognized by the state and cannot be recognized in the same way by your fellow citizens. We're doing great damage to our fellow citizens.
And the case that a lot of people are citing as precedent, those who support you, is the Loving case, which finally, when the Supreme Court ruled on it, struck down laws that prohibited interracial marriage.
That's right. And it was interesting because it was California, the first case of a Supreme Court in the United States was the California Supreme Court that struck down a California prohibition against people getting married of different races. And then a few years later, in Loving versus Virginia in 1967, the United States Supreme Court unanimously struck down as unconstitutional a Virginia statute that prohibited people of different races from getting married. I pointed out to the judge in our case that when President Obama was born, his parents could not have been married in Virginia. They would have been guilty of committing a crime.
Is this an opinion that you have always had, or was there a road to Damascus here?
There's no epiphany that I can point to. I think I was raised to believe in equality, of decency, respect for citizens of other races or other backgrounds and so forth. I've never, to my knowledge, harbored a belief that people who had a different sexual orientation were outcasts or individuals who should be discriminated against or put in a separate box in our society. So this issue of same-sex marriage, as I think everyone knows, is a relatively current issue in our political environment, but I don't know that I've ever felt that we should discriminate against our fellow citizens in this way.
And have some of your conservative friends called you up and said, Ted, what are you doing?
Yes. A lot of people have called me up and asked me what in the world I'm doing, and I've tried to explain. I wrote about 3,500 words to explain what I characterized as the conservative case for same-sex marriage. It was published by Newsweek in January. It was on the cover. The article was a cover article, and I tried to explain why marriage between two individuals who love one another, who want to live in a stable relationship, should be encouraged, not discouraged by conservatives, because marriage is a building block of our society and a building block of our neighborhoods and a building block of our economy. It should be neither conservative nor liberal. It should be an American value, and we should all support that.
And we want to get some listeners on the line with you. But one other question before we go to the phones, and that is a lot of us who remember Bush v. Gore could wonder, how are you getting along with David Boies?
David and Boies and I, David's one of the finest lawyers in the United States. He's a wonderful individual as well as being a great lawyer. He's got a great sense of humor. He's got a keen intellect. We've always been friends, even though we were on the opposite side of the Bush versus Gore case. I had enormous respect for him, and we have always been good friends. He is a marvel to work with, and anyone who might want to read the transcripts of the trial and listen to David or to listen, to read, mm-hmm. David's cross-examination of the opposing witnesses, we'll see a consummately skilled lawyer in action. It's a real pleasure to be on his side.
And we would have to read it because the court did not allow microphones or cameras in the courtroom.
That's right. There was an issue, and the judge was willing to allow cameras in the courtroom to provide a limited view to the American public of what was going on in this very, very important case. The Supreme Court decided that that should not be done. In my judgment and David's judgment, it was a real mistake because the American people should have an opportunity to see what happens in a courtroom when our most fundamental values are being litigated.
Our guest is the former Solicitor General of the United States, Theodore Ted Olson, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Alex is calling us from Sacramento.
I want to thank you, Mr. Olson, for pointing out this is a, shouldn't be a partisan or political issue at all. But my question is on legal strategy. Many of the challenges on Prop 8 and on other state bans of gay marriage have been based on the right of homosexuals to marry and the discrimination against homosexuals as a protected class. But has there been any consideration on gender-based discrimination, since most of the bans are based on a gender exclusion principle, that is that marriage is only between a man and a woman? And is there a right for the government basically to interfere with a marriage and question the gender of any of the individuals entering into that marriage? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Alex, thank you.
Alex, that's a very, very good question. In fact, we have raised that issue in our case in California. We have argued that it is both discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, but it's also based on discrimination. It is discrimination on the basis of gender, because I, as a man, can marry a woman, but I cannot marry another man. The same goes true for women. People have said, some of the people arguing against us have said, well, you can get married, you can just marry someone of the opposite sex. So the decision that California has made is based on gender as well as sexual orientation, and we hope that that will be an important part of the findings in this case.
Let's go next to Mark, and Mark's with us from Oakland.
Hi there. It seems the essence of the argument is that one has a civil right to marry whomever one chooses, but of course it's a civil right, then that would apply to plural marriage as well, that if one wants to marry whomever one chooses, it shouldn't be limited to just one person.
Well, that is also an issue that frequently gets raised. We limit marriage between one person and another person, a singular marriage. The state, and that's an issue that's been litigated mostly about 100 years or so ago, that there are many reasons that the state has to limit marriage to a single person with another person because of coercion, because of disparity in bargaining power and things of that nature. So the issue is, does the state have a legitimate interest to prohibit a person from getting married to one another? There are lots of interests that allow a state to make that distinction, but we've pointed out that the state's arguments against same-sex marriage fall apart as soon as you start considering them. People have said, well, marriage is for procreation, but we don't limit marriage to people who plan to or can procreate. People say that marriage is an institution that should, it's always been this way, and therefore the traditional definition of marriage should be maintained. But if we stuck to the traditional definition of marriage, we wouldn't have interracial marriages.
But if it's a civil rights issue, should this civil right be extended so that people can marry whomever they choose, including plural marriage? Or, in your own words, do you propose a system where we discriminate against our fellow citizens?
No, all civil rights are based upon the constitutional principles of individual liberty and equality. If the government wishes to discriminate against someone, the government has to provide a compelling justification. There are justifications to limit marriage against polygamous marriages.
Or upon the nature of someone's age.
Yes, someone's at the age of consent or people that are related to one another. You have to look at the individual reasons. Does the state have a reason?
But if people want to enter into plural marriage, if adults want to make that, if there is no coercion, if they want to enter into a system that is legal in 100 countries around the world, you're saying it's okay to discriminate against them.
No, what we're saying is the state would have to justify that kind of discrimination. It's an interesting argument that people are making, because if you allow same-sex marriage, somehow you open the door to polygamous marriages.
The slippery slope argument.
That's a slippery slope argument, but it's curious because same-sex individuals are not promoting polygamy. It's opposite-sex people. When there's been polygamous marriages, it's been between people of the opposite sex. But it is an argument, the sky is falling type of an argument, that we feel that we've got very, very strong answers to.
We're talking with Theodore Olson today, a partner in Gibson Dunn, co-counsel for the plaintiffs in Perry versus Schwarzenegger and former Solicitor General of the United States. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And let me ask you about some questions that have been raised about tactics. Some who are on your side say there are two arguments. One, it's too early to take a case before the Supreme Court, that this is a dangerous road, that if you lose this case, it could be decades before the court would take another argument.
Well, that is an argument that Martin Luther King kept dealing with. People would say, you're going too fast. People aren't ready for what you're doing. He wrote an eloquent response to that in a letter from the Birmingham jail. People are being denied their constitutional rights. And so when you tell those people, well, why don't you wait? You have to answer the question, well, how long and wait for what? The other point, and we believe their constitutional rights are being denied, they have a right to go into court. Civil rights are never won by people that wait, or very seldom
well,
are won by people that wait.
Incremental approach might be.
Well, what is an incremental approach, and how long does it wait? When these issues have been put to the voters, it hasn't been good for same-sex marriages.
And that's the second argument. This Proposition 8 was passed at the ballot box. It's going to be found very persuasive, I think, by a lot of judges that this is the will of the people as expressed at the ballot box. And some people say, wait a minute, if you're going to get this right, you need to get it at the ballot box where it was lost.
Yes. And of course, ballot box arguments are the same arguments that would have kept restrictions against marriages between people of different races, that would have kept people in separate but not equal schools, that would have kept a lot of our institutions. We have ballot boxes, but we also have a constitution. And the courts are where people go when they feel their constitutional rights are being taken away by a majority of people. Let me make one more point. Whether we brought this case or not, someone else was going to bring it. There are millions of people in the United States that would have hired a lawyer to bring a case to challenge restrictions on same-sex marriage. We felt, and our clients felt, and those who are supporting us felt, if there is going to be a case brought, and there is, it should be something that is well-structured by people who know how to handle cases in court, and it's being done in the right way. We think it's the right time, and we think the issues that we're bringing to the court are strong.
Gary's on the line with us from Bountiful in Utah.
Hi, thanks, Neil.
Go ahead, please.
Presuming that Perry goes on appeal to the Supreme Court, how does Mr. Olson presume to address the issues raised by Baker v. Nelson?
And remind us, Baker v. Nelson?
Baker v. Nelson was a Supreme Court decision that was rendered shortly after. Actually, it wasn't a decision. It was done on appeal from a case in I believe it was Wisconsin.
I think it was Michigan.
Michigan.
It was Michigan or Minnesota. It was a prohibition on same-sex marriages. It was a challenge that was brought in a federal court. The lower federal court struck down the challenge, and the United States Supreme Court did not render a decision, did not take the case, and it's not a precedent in the context of what we're talking about today. California's situation, and I should make a point that California, for a while, permitted, under a California constitutional Supreme Court decision, permitted same-sex marriages, and then Proposition 8 came along and took away the right. So there are 18,000 couples, same-sex couples, married in California, and those marriages are lawful. What we're saying is that the California voters took away a constitutional right that already existed. We're relying on a Supreme Court case called Romer versus Evans, in which something like that, Romer versus Colorado, in which the people of Colorado took away rights from people on the basis of their sexual orientation, plus the fact that California now has this crazy quilt system where some people can get married, some people can't get married, some people are legally married, and if people are legally married in another state, they can be legally recognized in California. So there is a very, very strange system that denies equal protection to all of the citizens of California.
Now, you're currently awaiting a decision from the district court in San Francisco?
We put on a three-week trial with experts from all fields that might be relevant to this question, distinguished individuals, educators from as far away as Oxford, Stanford, Harvard, UCLA, and so forth. The judge heard all of the evidence. There's a sidebar issue going on now that's really irrelevant to the outcome. The judge will soon schedule closing arguments in California. We will go out there and present them, and then we expect a decision.
And whoever loses is expected to appeal to the Ninth Circuit, and presumably it will go to the Supreme Court. And if it does, what are you, David Boyce, going to do? Flip a coin? Who gets to argue?
Well, David and David is a consummate trial lawyer. I spend a good part of my life in appellate courts, and we'll see what happens when we get there. But what we've done in this case, we work very, very collegially together and rely on the skills of the other person. We'll see what happens. But I'll tell you this, that we work in close harmony. We won't have an issue in resolving that.
Well, we hope the Supreme Court then decides to issue at least an audio tape of these arguments so we can listen. Ted Olson, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Neil. Thank you.
Former Solicitor General Ted Olson, a partner at Gibson Dunn and co-counsel for the plaintiffs in Perry v. Schwarzenegger, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. Tomorrow, understanding bullies. Why do they do it? Well, why did you do it? Tell us your story tomorrow. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.